And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, written by Sylvia Berger, is The Sum of Man, and is based on Triumph of Love by Leona Bruckner and published by Simon & Schuster, Incorporated.
I've thought and thought about the way the miracle came into our lives. Over and over I used to try to figure it out, sometimes praying, sometimes shouting at God to send me an answer. And in the beginning, I used to cry about it. But then more and more I found that I was smiling and laughing. But still I kept asking, how did it happen to us?
Billy.
That's Leona trying to get the kids in to lunch. What I was saying, you take an ordinary person like me, Herman Bruckner, living in an ordinary apartment in the Bronx, making an ordinary living as a salesman.
Are you there, High?
Right here, Leona.
Will you please get Billy to stop his harmonica and come and wash up for lunch?
Right. Billy, lunch. I was saying about this apartment, it's nothing special, but it looks beautiful to us because we have made it beautiful. And you know why? Because it's our home. But when it happened, you know what I was going to do there for a while? I was going to take Leona and our daughter Karen and get into our car and go off somewhere, just go off somewhere to some strange city where nobody knew us, change our name. Running away. Can you picture it? I was running away from the miracle of my life.
Dr. Morris Goldman.
If I live to be 100, I'll never forget the time or the day. March 7th, 1950. 5 p.m. High has just brought me to the hospital, and he's being very calm. Very calm.
Everything is going to be all right, Leona. Karen is at my mother's, and I packed your toothbrush in the suitcase, and your toothbrush and your hairbrush, and everything is fine, and everything's going to be all right now. All you have to do is just relax and take it easy.
Then all of a sudden things are happening, and they're happening fast. I'm upstairs and the doctor's there and the nurse is putting a cone of ether over my face.
Take a deep breath, Mrs. Bruckner.
But the pain is forever. The pain's never ending.
Breathe deeply, Mrs. Bruckner.
Oh, sweet sleep, come to me. Carry me into dreamless solitude. Wake me to see the face of my child.
Ten past six. 1 hour and 10 minutes since they took Leona up. I wonder how everything is going up there. I could ask, but did they ever tell you anything? Oh, just sit here, mister, looking at a blooming magazine like a blooming baby. Oh, wait till Karen sees her new baby brother. Brother. Sister. Wait until Karen sees her new baby sister. Sister? Could be a brother. Now, that's Leona. I know that's Leona.
Reception.
Is it my wife, nurse?
Yes, doctor. He's right here.
I'm right here.
I'll tell him. You have a son, Mr. Bruckner. 7 pounds, 2 ounces. Mr. Bruckner! Mr. Bruckner, where are you running?
The cigars. I forgot to buy the cigars. 22 minutes past 8. 2 hours and 22 minutes since my boy was born. Wouldn't you think they would have let me go up and see him by this time? I mean, the doctor could have come down at least and said a few words, taken a cigar, and... Nurse.
Yes, Mr. Bruckner?
It's hours since they telephoned down.
The doctor is busy just now. Would you please wait just a little longer?
What is he busy with? Baby was born 2.5 hours ago. I wonder if something is wrong. Oh, that's silly. Maybe something happened to Leona. They're just letting her rest. Oh, here's a magazine. I wish I had the patience to read it.
Mr. Bruckner?
Oh, doctor, you startled me. I was just sitting here thinking all kinds of... Doctor, is my wife all right?
Your wife is fine.
Oh, you had me scared there for a minute. I mean, the way you came over. My baby?
Your baby's alive.
Here, Doc, have a cigar.
But I almost wish the baby were dead.
I stared at him. For the first time, I really looked at my doctor's face, and I realized that he saw me, but he didn't want to look at me. Well, what is it?
Your baby was born without arms.
I am dreaming. I am dreaming. My mind is drifting into darkness. My heart is pounding slow and heavy. I cannot breathe. I must try to breathe. Breathe.
I don't know what else is wrong with him.
Breathe.
He undoubtedly has organic malformations, too. I don't know what to say to you.
Does Leona... Does my wife know?
I put your wife to sleep the moment I saw the boy. Your wife knows nothing. She sleeps.
How shall a mother tell the beauty of her child? Laughter and love and goodness are born into the world with a child. Goodness and love, life everlasting. Oh, sweet sleep, let me awaken now. Let me see the face of my beloved child.
Leona. Leona.
What is that crying? Whose
Leona.
Voice is that weeping in my world? My
Leona.
Beautiful world?
Leona.
You'll have to leave now, Mr. Bruckner. Mr. Bruckner.
What?
Your wife can't hear you. She's been anesthetized. And you are disturbing the other patients.
What?
You had better leave, Mr. Bruckner.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'll leave now. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. I must go home now. Karen is waiting. I promised I would tell her as soon as her new baby... Let's see now, there was something I promised somebody I would do. Yes, of course, my mother. I told my mother I would telephone her.
Hello?
Hello, mother.
Hello?
Hello, mother? Mother?
Yes, hi. Well, tell me the good news.
Mother. 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 And then I was wandering in the streets, and I was crying and shouting. And then I was in my mother's house, and my mother was saying something. She was talking to me, and I seemed to be having trouble understanding her.
Do you want to go with him, Hi?
Go?
Your father is going to the synagogue. He's asking you to go with him.
Go with him?
To pray. Do you want to pray with him?
No. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I walked out of my mother's home, and I wandered in the street. And then I was in a synagogue and my knees bent under me and I couldn't raise myself.
Can I help you?
And it was someone speaking to me and I said, no, I just want to sit here. And I sat there and it was as if I had been condemned to death. Prayers were being said all around me, but death was on my tongue and in the palms of my hands. And I sat there. And then as I sat, two men came in through the door of the synagogue, and they came in slowly, and I saw that they were beggars. And I saw that one was without an arm. As long as I live! As long as I live!
What is it?
As long as I live!
What has happened?
My son will never be a beggar! Never, 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 as long as I live! And I ran out and I wandered in the streets again. I shouted and I wept. And then it was morning and I came to the door of a man who was a rabbi and he took me in.
You're in pain.
And meaning to tell him about my son, I found that I was weeping still. And turning on my pain, I ordered him as a man of God to give me the answer.
The answer to what?
What am I to do?
That I cannot tell you.
You are a man of God.
I am a man whose faith is in God.
Then tell me why he has put on earth a human being so monstrously deformed.
No deformity is monstrous, except when the deformity of our will makes it so.
What do you mean?
Nothing on earth is perfect.
Perfect? I am not talking of a cast in an eye or of a broken toe. I am talking of a child without arms.
There are the imperfections which are visible to the naked eye, such as a hand or a foot. And those which show no inner bruise, but are nevertheless within us. Those who have faith are able to live beyond their imperfection, to live and to give to life. You saw in the synagogue, you said, two beggars.
Two beggars?
And you said that one was missing an arm.
He had only one arm.
And the other?
The other had two arms.
The other had two arms. And he was still a beggar. So you see, it isn't the lack of arms that turned these men into beggars. I can't tell you what to do about your son. But this I know, and this I can tell you. That unlike arithmetic, where the whole is equal to the sum of its parts, man is more than the listing of his limbs, the number of his eyes, the sum of his fingers and toes.
I have thought about this so many times. How the first word a mother says when she hears her baby's very first cry out, "Is he normal?" Now it's the whole day since my son was born, and they haven't brought him to me so I can hold him, so I can see him. They tell me there's nothing to fear. Then what is this I feel that is like fear? The moment my husband comes, I'll have him look in the nursery window and tell me what my son's like.
What am I to tell my wife? What giant joke has been played on a human life?
What is it you want me to tell you, Mr. Bruckner?
What am I to do?
I don't know, Mr. Bruckner.
But you were a doctor.
Only a doctor, Mr. Bruckner.
Why was my baby born this way? Is it my fault?
Definitely it is not, as you call it, your fault, Mr. Bruckner, nor your wife's. How these things happen, medical science does not as yet have an explanation for. We think your baby's condition may have been caused by the improper development of the cells during pregnancy. Not sure.
What am I to do? I don't know what to do.
Social service. Yes, doctor. He's right here. Yes, it was a very good idea that you sent him to us. Here at the Hospital for Crippled Children, we've had a certain amount of experience in handling matters like this. We'll do what we can. That was your doctor, Mr. Bruckner.
Yes.
You have another child, Mr. Bruckner. A little girl.
3 years old.
And she's normal.
She's beautiful, Karen. She's beautiful.
Karen's a lovely name, too.
She depends upon us.
You're her parents.
For everything. For food, love, happiness. If we make her life happy, she is happy. If we bring sorrow into that innocent life, tragedy. The other children making fun of her, taunting her. And when she grows up, when the time comes for her to bring her young men home to meet her family, her brother.
What does your wife say?
She doesn't know yet.
I see. We had a case in here some time ago that was similar to yours.
Similar?
A little girl without arms.
Oh.
The parents like you were young. They, too, couldn't adjust to accepting a deformed baby.
What happened?
The child was institutionalized. Within 2 years, they had another child, completely normal. It'll be the same with you.
The same?
You cannot possibly raise such a child yourself, Mr. Bruckner. And no one with the slightest bit of knowledge would expect you to. Best thing for you to do is put your baby in an institution at once.
What will I tell my wife?
In a few days, you can tell your wife the baby's dead.
It is 40 hours since my baby was born. The doctor tells me there's an epidemic in the nursery and they cannot bring my son to me. Though I want to have my baby with me, I know there's nothing to be afraid of. Is it my imagination? Or did High's eyes look as though he'd been crying? It's strange, isn't it, that High hasn't seen the baby yet? The moment he arrives, I'm going to make him tell me exactly where our son's bassinet is standing. My baby's little bassinet will be right there, beside the others. There's nothing to fear. I've nothing to fear. I want my baby! I want my husband! Hi, where's my baby?
Mrs. Bruckner, please, calm
yourself. I want my baby! Where's my baby?
Doctor, Mrs. Bruckner, please. Please calm yourself.
Mrs. Bruckner, here's your husband. There's nothing wrong. Your baby's been a little sick.
You're lying. My baby's dead. Where's my baby?
We're telling you the truth, Mrs. Bruckner. Your husband will tell you. Isn't it true, Mr. Bruckner?
Tell her the truth, Doctor.
Eleven a.m. In 2 hours, my husband will deliver our baby to the city hospital. We have signed a paper allowing them to do with the baby as they wish. We have come to that decision voluntarily. We know it's the only decision we can make. It's a decision based on common sense, on fact.
We have another child to consider, Leona. We have to do what is wise for all of us. The social worker herself said it would be best to put him away, Leona.
It would
forget.
Be best.
My brother-in-law is going to carry him for me.
Yes, I. Don't cry.
Well, I'm not crying.
There's only one thing I'd like to ask you, I. Don't look at him. Don't look at him. You'll never be able to forget him if you see his little face.
Four p.m. We delivered my son to the city hospital at 3 this afternoon. My brother-in-law, Sid, carried him. I never saw my baby's face. I never held him. How small he looked wrapped in his little blue blanket. How small, how helpless. Sid looked astonished when he suddenly saw me take off my coat and wrap it around my baby. After all, what does he know? My baby could have been feeling cold.
It is 8 days now that our baby has been at the city hospital. We have told neighbors that our baby is dead. I am calm. Nothing can ever disturb me again. Nothing will shake me in my knowledge that we have done the right thing.
Who's that? No, I won't answer it. What can anybody say to me anymore? There's no one I want to hear from.
Hello.
This is Bruckner?
Yes.
This is the Homeless Boys Association.
I must stop this. I must stop this trembling. I will be home, so I must get control of myself. He'll be frightened when he sees me. I must stop this. I must stop it.
Leona, what's happened? Tell me what's happened.
The homeless boys. They called me.
What homeless boys?
The Association of Homeless Boys. A few minutes ago.
Oh, Leona, for pity's sake, they got your name from the telephone book. All they're doing is asking for contributions.
Well, we'll give them a contribution, won't we, I?
Yes, of course, Leona, if you want to.
I do want to. We have to. Don't you see, I? Those boys. Those are the homeless boys.
I have been driving around the streets for hours, circling the hospital where they have my son. I wonder if they're taking good care of him. I wonder if he realizes that his parents are not with him. Lord, my God, I have believed. I have tried to walk in righteousness. I have never wished evil. I have never done willful cruelty. If I have done anything in my life to merit this punishment, why have you visited it on an innocent child? Tell me now, why am I so stricken? Tell me why I cannot tear this yearning for my son out of my heart. My bones cry for him. My flesh calls to him. Let me forget him. It is possible that that is when my answer came. As I wandered through the streets night after night, circling that hospital where my son lay, I talked to God, I argued, and I pleaded, and at times I shouted, because somehow it seemed to me then that if I shouted, he might hear me. And then one night I came home, and Leona met me at the door, and she said,
"The hospital has been calling."
"What do they want?"
"Our baby is dying."
And the first blow that came to my heart was the thought that this is the answer. That every move we had made had really been a prayer that our son should die. We had denied him our home. We had denied him his parentage. We had denied him the love that is the right of every child. We had denied him life itself. And now we begged our son to forgive us. And we begged God to let our son live. We who had turned away from the miracle of life prayed that God would spin that miracle for us once again and give us our son once more. And the next morning, the news came that our son lived.
But as soon as we heard it, we began again to discuss the difficulties of raising a child so handicapped as ours.
The strangers staring at him in the street.
The neighbors pointing, whispering.
The other children shrinking from him and from our daughter.
And after all, we're not prepared for such a task. What understanding do we have? What knowledge to equip ourselves with for living with the different?
And as we talked, we came to our answer. The answer that the two beggars had brought to me in the synagogue. That man is more than the sum of his physical attributes. And I looked at Leona. Well, Leona,
I want our son home.
And we went, and we took our boy, and we brought him home. And we taught him the way any parents would teach any child. Except that our son is brighter than most and learned more quickly. And we are slow the way all parents of all children are.
Billy.
But Billy is a patient teacher, and the love he has taught us we have learned. And don't think we're the only ones. Around here, when a woman gets a headache, somebody breaks a leg, a husband loses a job, they say, "Look at the Bruckners." And all of a sudden they feel fine. They feel good, glad. Because Billy has taught us that life is so good. Such a glad and joyous miracle. I have only one wish for my son. I pray that someday he will be able to do for the world what God did for us when he gave us our son. When I look at my son playing with the other kids, doing somersaults with his sister, when I listen to him playing his silly harmonica, I want to sing with King David. I want to say, "I will give thanks unto the Lord with my whole heart. I will tell of all thy marvelous works. I will be glad and exult in thee.
I will sing praise to thy name, O Most High.
Billy. Hi, what's he doing now?
What are you doing, Billy? Oh, he's raiding the icebox, Leona. He's looking for something to eat.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Due to circumstances beyond our control, it will not be possible to present a previously recorded talk by Dr. Sarah Fader of Columbia, Missouri, member of the faculty of the University of Missouri, and national president of the Pioneer Women of America and Canada. However, we shall read Dr. Fader's message from our studio. In the sudden, awful, and hushed stillness which follows any personal tragedy comes the question, why? Why must it strike me? Our people know the question well. From times immemorial, they have asked when troubled, my God, wherefore hast thou forsaken me? Torturous is the path of adjusting to tragedy. The loss of our beloved ones, our own incapacity or permanent disability, resulting from birth or illness, are problems indeed. It is how we face up to our private problems that distinguishes those who have inner faith from those who have lost their way. We Jews have considerable guidance in connection with the preciousness of life, the sum of man. Our prophets teach us that life is the gift of God. Thus, when various peoples, from the most primitive to the Spartans, practiced infanticide, the early Jews were admonished, "Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put stumbling blocks before the blind." Two, our sages have said that he who saves even one soul in Israel is as if he had brought a whole world into existence. To this very day, the life-saving work of our people has continued steadily, whether it be overseas work or in the United States, in the extended Jewish social services or the historic work. The miracle achieved by the young state of Israel in its great task of rescuing of Jews, men, women, and children. But collective wisdom and collective responsibility are not enough for the average individual. The problem of how to be at peace with one's own conscience is dramatically presented this morning by the young couple whose deep suffering continued until they faced up to their individual responsibilities. In our troubled world, with constantly shifting emphasis and the breakdown of the folkways and more, it requires even greater courage and fortitude to achieve inner security and peace. This lesson we learn well this morning. There is also another lesson here for us. The solution of a problem, whether it be related to children physically or mentally abnormal, or to any other problem, may be achieved in different ways by different families. But there is emphasized here the Jewish traditional family pattern, steadfastness, loyalty, and a desire together to seek a solution. This is our ideal. The Hebrew poetess Rachel states well this bond of loyalty is continuing. In storm or in silence, in comfort or weeping, when sunlight is shining, when sunlight is gone. Our eternal light drama today, The Sum of Man, was written by Sylvia Berger. Cantor David Putterman signed a liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Claudia Morgan, Roger DeCoven, Adelaide Klein, Bert Collin, Norman Rose, and Rosemary Murphy. The music was written by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Roy Shield. This has been an NBC Radio Network production, directed by Daniel Sutter.